Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
Big thank you to everyone who showed up to the Rec Room last week in Toronto to watch the Steve Dangle podcast, to watch the Agent Provocateur show, and of course, the Chris Johnston show. It was, I couldn't believe all the people who were there. CJ could barely leave the venue because he was mobbed by so many fans. It was incredible. So thank you. Thank you all for buying tickets and being at the SDPN All-Star Takeover. What a fun time, Siege.
It was honestly, like, it blew my mind that not only for one show, but for a second day, there were that many people inside the Rec Room. I had so many great, like, personal touch points with fans of our show. You know, at the risk of leaving anyone out, you know, I talked to a guy who was telling me he was living in Qatar when we launched our show, and that, you know, he's a runner himself and he had to get up super early to run there because of the heat. And he looked forward to his Friday morning runs at, you know, whatever time it was, 4 or 5 a.m. because our Thursday show with the time difference would land around that time. And so we would be along for his runs. You know, a number of 100%ers, some that had driven in from Belleville, you know, which is a couple hours drive from Toronto, just to be part of the show. A lot of aspiring younger folks in our industry that hope to mimic what we're doing and everything in between. So it was, I mean, not to pat ourselves on the back, but it was like truly like felt lifted up by love in the room there those couple days. And you know, really, I thought it was an exciting weekend in Toronto. All around, it's cool to have the All-Star game. I think, look, at variety is the spice of life. There's not one answer. There's not one formula or anything like that. But, you know, being in a traditional hockey market, I think did give a little added atmosphere and energy to the event. Obviously, so many NHL folks are based in Toronto. The league has a head office here. A lot of agents and media members are based in Toronto because it's a common place to be able to make your living doing those jobs. And, there was just a whole bunch of stuff going on, and I'm still trying to get my voice back, Julian, even though I've been pounding the tea here for going on 4 or 5 days.
A wise man once told me to mix in a little water. I think you should do that.
I've been doing that too, man. Trust me. This isn't actually a reflection of poor off-ice decisions. I just got like a cold I couldn't shake, and I went to bed, I think, Sunday night at like 8:30, which for me is unheard of. But I just was, I mean, first of all, I had to get up early, and I know we're going to get into this, to drive to London, you know, for everything that happened down there on Monday, but also just residual effect of the All-Star weekend and trying to get my voice back, and slowly but surely I should have it by next week at the rate I'm going.
Two questions about the weekend before we talk about Hockey Canada. What did you make of the entire All-Star festivities at Scotiabank Arena, the game, the skills competition, and the rest of that experience?
Honestly, I think it's a sign that the All-Star game could be back. I mean, I don't want to be going around making huge statements because, you know, there's not going to be an All-Star game in 2025 because of the Four Nations tournament that they're going to have. 2026, there's hope to have it, but I don't know where that's going to be just yet. I know places like Edmonton and Detroit, Seattle, you know, places where there's been a new arena, I think are kind of among the group of teams that would be there next. And so it's hard for me to predict 2 years from now if I'll be able to say that, yes, it's back fully. But, you know, my big takeaway, honestly, is the players put on a show. They all seem to want to be there. I didn't sense much angst, or I didn't hear any complaints about it all. There could be all kinds of different reasons for that. I think one thing the league's done well the last few years is they've added a bye week. So even the players on All-Star break do get time away to go on a vacation or just downtime to do whatever they want to do. If you remember, like when I was early in my career as a reporter, there were literal players that were willing to sit out an NHL game in order to skip the All-Star game.
The Alexander Ovechkin suspension.
I think Nicholas Lidstrom might have done it once too, if I'm not mistaken. Pavel Datsyuk, maybe. I mean, Alex, yeah. So the point is that was the environment that the All-Star game was sort of in when I first started covering it earlier in my career. And it's just not that now. I mean, everybody was there. Everyone was in a good mood. The media access was about as good as you could expect. I mean, it's hard to find much to complain about. The game is still the game, but you know, I thought it was an entertaining afternoon and the skills thing worked. I think those changes were worth it. So my high level takeaway, and this is, I'm not crediting even just one thing. I think it's maybe the cumulative effort that has gone into trying to make this more appealing from the league level. You know, obviously Toronto put on a good show. There's lots of celebrities around, if that's your thing. You know, Justin Bieber's playing live shows, which he hasn't been able to do much because of what he's been dealing with health-wise, for all the All-Stars and the NHL's guests. I mean, I just, it felt like a really fun time. That's my takeaway. I sincerely enjoyed it. I think they've hit on some things that'll work. And you know, now that the test will be, can they do it again and again and again? And fortunately, they're probably not going to have to. If you look at the way this international schedule lines up, where you're, you know, let's hope they're having Olympic breaks every 4 years and potentially on the off years doing full World Cup breaks, you know, starting with 2028. I mean, maybe the All-Star game will be a little bit more limited, and that might actually help boost its appeal because it doesn't feel monotonous or repetitive. But I really do think the league should feel good about itself leaving this All-Star. And I don't think they did last year in Florida, quite honestly. I mean, it was fantastic weather. I'm not saying people didn't have fun there in South Florida, but this felt like a better executed event from top to bottom. And you know, let's see where it goes next. What about you? What do you think? This was your first one.
Siege, I got to tell you, I had a blast. I enjoyed working there, getting to cover stories, getting to talk to players, live blogging the event. I really enjoyed the skills competition. That was my favorite part of the actual All-Star experience. Being in the same room as Michael Bublé as he allegedly didn't trip out on shrooms, that's something. I have a lot of friends who don't care about hockey who all weekend long were just sending me video being like, what the hell is this guy doing? And I have to tell everyone, no, he was not on shrooms, apparently. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was really fun.
Steve Dangle's the only source for that information that I trust. Now that I
and he ended up on TMZ.
On TMZ.
It's so weird. But I really enjoyed it, and I love the access to players. Like you're going to the pods, and everyone's just hovering around, waiting for whichever player is going to pull up, and everyone's asking these questions. Like I like that. That was a really really cool experience. Obviously, seeing Elias Lindholm where have a Canucks name a logo by his nameplate and covering that story, that took up a lot of my time, but there were some good memories and some good friendships and meeting people who I hadn't really met before that week that will stay with me for a long time. I'm really grateful for that experience.
I'm glad to hear it. I mean, it's funny, your media experience is akin to if you're a young kid who gets to go to the game. You're like, I get to see everybody on the ice at once that I, you know, maybe you've only seen on video before. I mean, that's kind of what it's like in the media room. You're like, wow, I can interview 20 big name players inside an hour window here just by walking around one room. I mean, it's pretty unique.
The second question I just wanted to ask, and we can get to it real quick, just because I was thinking of all the people who wanted to say hi to you, take photos of you after our live show, and a lot of people asked you for advice. What do you think was the best piece of advice you gave during that weekend?
Oh, man. Here's the problem with advice. Everybody wants a roadmap, but there's no roadmap.
No.
I'm just saying, like, that's I almost seize up every time I ask because, you know, there was like a young guy on the second day, Saturday, who stopped me, still in high school, and, you know, it was really nice of him. And I was actually trying to put myself in his shoes because I at that time was very much wanting to be doing the kind of things I'm doing today. I don't think I would have had the guts to walk up to someone like me at that time who has a job in the industry just because I was kind of painfully shy about things like that. And like, it's like he asks and I want to give him like, I want to like touch him on the forehead almost and be like, here's what you do, bud. And it's going to like, it's all going to work out. But you know, I think the hard part is there isn't a map. I don't know what the industry is going to look like, to be honest. And I'm very proud and happy with my career. None of this is a complaint, but it's like, I feel like you're still in a battle every day to keep your spot on the team and to keep the jobs I have. And, you know, I don't know where it's going either. So, you know, I just think general advice that could probably work in a lot of industries makes sense. Be relentless, find opportunities, go out there and make mistakes. I think network and, you know, build out your network, but also maintain your network is super important, because a lot of people do come back in your life that you maybe couldn't imagine when you're 20 or 21 years old, that you might get to 38 or 39. And all of a sudden you're both, you know, very involved with each other professionally. I think those are the kinds of things I try to say. I try to tell people to keep chasing their passions. I mean, the truth is obviously there has to be amount of luck to have success at anything. I think there has to be a certain amount of almost obsession or a relentless push towards something. You're going to be knocked down. You're going to be told it's not for you. You're going to lose a job or two or three or four. You're going to get negative feedback, but you still have to wake up and want to do it. Right. And then I think the same would be what you would tell like a young player, right? Like, you're not going to make every team. You're going to lose ice time. You're going to have coaches that challenge you or teammates that challenge you. You have to still get up and put in the work and keep pushing. And eventually you hope something falls your way. And so I don't think I gave any great advice, because I don't know that there's perfect advice to give. But I do think, you know, any little bit that you can look someone in the eye and tell them, like, I made it, kind of what at the time when I was their age, it certainly felt against the odds. I don't know if it actually was against the odds. I mean, I was born in a great country to loving parents with lots of opportunity. So it wasn't like this isn't some like crazy story anyone's making a movie out of, but it felt like I didn't know how to get in. I didn't have any connections. I didn't know what to do. And I just put my head down and worked, and here we are. So I don't know that, I don't know there is a perfect answer. And that's why I hate it, because it's a question that's very fair for someone to ask people like us, but I have never figured out how to answer it. And so I'm now just blabbing and blabbing and blabbing.
No, I think you handled that question as best as you could. And I think you handled any question that some of the younger people at our event were able to ask. I think you did well with that, Siege. Don't be so hard on yourself.
No, it's because I want to help, though. Like, honestly, like, that's why, that's where it comes from. I'm not looking for a pick me up. It's just like, you know, it's hard to tell someone that you're going to go through some shit and you just got to keep going through it and going through it. And then if you love it enough, I think there is a chance things could break your way. And then there's a million unknowns that we all face every day in our life. So who knows? The other highlight I got to say, too, though, just quickly, is also on the Saturday, a young guy was, he's a goaltender. He had a goalie sweatshirt on, you know, asked to get a picture, and his dad and him had seen me running one day, and he tried to get his dad to stop the car, and his dad's like, I'm not going to stop the car to bug this guy. So it was nice to actually meet up with him too. So it's cool to meet the fans, and you know, I trust the SDP and we'll be doing more live type shows. Cause I mean, that was just straight up a blast. I know a lot of work goes into planning that I had nothing to do with. I'm just told to show up at a time, and I could barely manage that. But you know, I'm grateful we got the chance.
Yeah. I'm glad you just made it on time.
Barely.
Anyway, thank you to everybody who attended our live show. And as always, thank you to the fans who listened to our show and subscribed to our show. We really appreciate it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Jade, and love you. This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Liquid IV. Staying up late, hanging out with friends, yelling at the game on TV, you do a lot over a big weekend. So when it's time to start another big week, celebrate Hydration Monday with Liquid IV. I was in Toronto a couple of days ago for the big show that CJ and I had, and I needed to hydrate. Really, really, I needed to hydrate. And I'm so glad I had those Liquid IV packets with me. You get yourself one little packet, 16 ounces of water. You open up the packet, you pour it out, you stir it up, and you get some delicious flavors. I have the white peach, which is pretty good. The lemon lime is also pretty good. The green grape, I thought that wasn't going to be as good as the other two flavors. That's actually my favorite one. And I feel great when I take it. I feel hydrated. A lot of people like to take these before their daily workouts as well. So that way they can keep themselves from feeling run down. There's no artificial sweeteners. It has three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, eight vitamins and nutrients, and non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. It's pretty good. Weekends are for going wild, or hey, maybe you're a guy who likes to get down in the week too. That's fine. Have a game plan for your Mondays or your Tuesdays, any day of the week with Liquid IV. Grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Johnston at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Superior Hydration today using promo code Johnston at liquidiv.com. We now have to take a bit of a serious turn with the podcast because we have to talk about the events of Monday. CJ, you drove to, I don't know how you got to London, but you were in London to hear from London police for the first time since charges were laid upon five players from the 2018 Canadian World Junior team in connection to the alleged sexual assault from that time. What did London police say? Let's break down what was said, what's out there, and everything that happened that day.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of words spoken. I don't know that there's a ton that was learned, although, that's not entirely fair. We got the exact criminal charges that had been placed, spelled out by the London police chief. I also got there Monday morning in time for the brief court hearing that was had, which is so-called first appearance in court. None of the players charged was physically in the courtroom. Actually, none of the lawyers representing the players charged was, because it was more of a formal hearing. And now basically the evidence that the Crown has will be sent out to those players as lawyers. And the next hearing is scheduled for 12 weeks from now on April 30th. So they've got that intervening time to obviously scrutinize that evidence and build their own cases. I'm sure, there'll be questions about some of the things in there, all that sort of stuff. So, that was. I hadn't been in court in quite some time. I was thinking the last time I was in a courtroom, I was a potential juror, call it 5 or 6 years ago. I didn't end up getting chosen for the jury, but I was in the courtroom possibly to do that. It's interesting to be in that situation. But really the main part of the day probably was the afternoon press conference, where you have the chief of police in London and the lead detective on the case, fielding a whole ton of questions from the assembled media there, obviously apologizing as well to the alleged victim in this case, which was probably the most notable. That would be your newsy takeaway, if you will. At least that was mine. And, there's a lot of questions they couldn't answer. I mean, like, the real question everybody, if you will boil it down, wants to know is, how do you have a case where, someone believes they're sexually assaulted in June of 2018? That person and a parent go to police within a day. An investigation is launched. It's closed a year later. It's reopened in 2022, and it's still early 2024 before charges are filed. I mean, that timeline is going to be, I think, pretty important to whatever happens next from a legal standpoint. And for that reason, the police just weren't able to answer many questions about why it took so long. They noted it's not two investigations. It was one investigation that was closed and reopened. So they can't really go back and say what happened in 2018 and up until the point that the case was shelved in 2019, because that's part of the active investigation. The detective, Dan, did reveal that there was new evidence that was uncovered in the meantime, and that they were able to talk to some different witnesses than they had in the first, whatever you call it, leg of the investigation. So maybe there's a hint there. But yeah, it was quite an event. I mean, the one local reporter said to me, "The circus has come to town." I mean, there was, I think, over 70 media members in the room, 14 or 15 television cameras, obviously a number of still photo, photo reporters there taking still photos, and then all the media types like myself. It was a big event. I think it reflects the interest in the case, and I don't suspect that's going to change as long as there are developments and things that keep happening in London. I think that reporters will be trekking there en masse to record what happens.
Anything else as a major takeaway before I ask about Bill Daly confirming to you and Ian Mendez about salary cap relief for the Flyers, the New Jersey Devils, and the Calgary Flames, all who have players who have been implicated in this scandal?
You know, there's not a whole lot else. I mean, I think it's notable that the police did confirm that the alleged victim has cooperated from start to finish. And you know, there was a victim statement read at Monday afternoon's press conference, which highlights how difficult it is to be a victim in this case, and obviously asked for continued privacy for that individual and her family as this goes along. Because, you know, really that, you know, that's essential. I think if this is going to continue forward, you know, the police were asked specifically because a civil lawsuit that was filed in 2022 mentioned that there were 8 players in the room. Obviously 5 players were charged in this case. Michael McLeod had 2 counts of sexual assault. Alex Formanton, Dylan Dubé, Carter Hart, and Cal Foote each had 1 count of sexual assault in terms of the charges. And what the detective said is basically they've laid all the charges that they had reasonable grounds to file at this point in time. But she being the detective, did not confirm whether there could be further charges or if that's still pending. You know, there was some, I guess, information there in that, but really, you know, I think we have to tread carefully here. And I know this won't be the last of when we speak about it. I'll point you to, though, that the next hearing, not coming till April 30th, is on the other side of the NHL's regular season. And, you know, this is not a hockey case, but there's obviously a hockey bent to it because we are a hockey podcast. You know, I think we'll be watching to see as time goes along how the NHL teams react and whether they're issuing qualifying offers in June to these players or not, even if there isn't yet much clarity in the judicial process, because I think it's quite likely that there won't be much clarity by June, but we're going to have to wait and let that play out a little more.
Let's get to the salary cap relief that will be given to the Philadelphia Flyers, the New Jersey Devils, and the Calgary Flames as a result of what's transpired. You and Ian Mendez worked on that story for The Athletic. What can you tell us about how that will work for those teams?
Well, essentially, the players themselves are being paid well on leave from their teams. There's precedent for that. Slava Voynov's probably the most obvious case. When he was going through his legal situation in Los Angeles, he was on paid leave for a period of time until that judicial process played out, and he ultimately had his contract terminated. In this case, you know, the players are being paid, but the teams are not being penalized for the fact that they're not there and available to play on the roster. They're essentially deemed non-roster players. And what that means is there's additional salary cap space available to replace them, which isn't always the case. I'll give you an example. If a player gets suspended for 5 games, you know, the team typically would have to recall someone to replace that player in the lineup, or maybe to just have another extra in the lineup, but they don't get additional salary cap room to do it. And so if a team didn't have the space to recall a replacement, then you know, almost too bad, you don't get a replacement. This is different circumstances. I mean, this alleged incident happened, you know, before these guys were in the NHL. You know, and so really it's just to keep the teams potentially from having salary cap challenges. Now, in the individual cases of these teams, I don't know if it matters so much just because of where they're at. The Devils, I'll just start with, obviously, Michael McLeod and Cal Foote were members of that team. First of all, they don't, you know, McLeod makes a little more than $2 million on the cap. Foote was, you know, basically a league minimum type of player. But the Devils were already in long-term injured relief to a significant degree with Dougie Hamilton, among others, out there. So they do possess a fair amount of salary cap space. And, I think that they will be a team that will look to add as the deadline gets close. But, you know, I'm not saying they can't use a little bit more, but it's not significant enough for me to say, okay, this is some advantage. And then you look at Philadelphia. Well, they've recalled Cal Peterson to replace Carter Hart in net. You know, Peterson makes $5 million against the cap. Carter Hart's a little under $4 million. And it's not to say they couldn't call, you know, recall another goaltender within their system who makes less, that they could sort of achieve maybe a net win in terms of being able to add more assets. But also, I think Philadelphia, like Calgary, who has Dylan Dubé on the roster, those are likely to be teams that are selling at the deadline. I mean, I suppose there's a world where that doesn't happen. But I mean, in Calgary's case, look, you've already traded Lindholm and Zadorov away in the season. You have other players that are of interest from other teams. I mean, it's sort of clear what's going on there. Philadelphia has had so many players on the market for so long, but remain in the playoff hunt. We'll have to see what happens. So, you know, I think ultimately, if we look at the individual examples case by case, the teams aren't really getting quote unquote advantages by this, but the league has ruled that because of the circumstances that led to the players being unavailable to them, they shouldn't be penalized for it either.
Okay. Well explained. And we will continue to follow the Hockey Canada story as more things develop. You mentioned New Jersey. I do want to stay there for a moment because if we can, I'd like to do some kind of a pulse check. Jack Hughes yesterday practicing with a non-contact jersey. And then earlier on Tuesday, he's practicing in a regular jersey. He was out for quite some time with an upper body injury. It looks like he might be closer to actually returning. But this is a team that is outside of the playoff picture right now. There are a lot of expectations expected for this Devils team that surprised a lot of people last year. What's your sense of the vibes, I guess, beyond what we just discussed in our previous segment, but with the rest of the team and their aspirations to make the playoffs?
Well, the vibes have to be immaculate when you're talking about bringing Jack Hughes back in the lineup. And, you know, I think it's notable that Jack Hughes traveled to Toronto and helped his brother Quinn select the team at the All-Star draft on Thursday night, but then returned to New Jersey to resume, you know, whatever workout, skating, rehab program he's doing because he is so close to a return. And in fact, you know, it sounds like it's possible he plays Thursday when the Flames are in New Jersey to face the Devils. And so, you know, yes, the Devils have underperformed to some degree this year. They haven't taken another step forward after taking a gigantic leap last year. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't point out that injuries have been a significant part of what's happened there. Not having Hughes available, not having Dougie Hamilton for a couple months already now, you know, is you know, those are significant blows to a team. And so I think, you know, Hughes coming back and a chance maybe to make a bit of a push for them to get back in the playoff race a little bit more firmly in the run up to March 8th, it would be a welcome sign. And, you know, I think the Devils are a team that will likely go out and get a defenseman before the deadline. I still think that they're going to consider upgrading a net. Although, I mean, when you figure out what's going on around this league with goaltenders, please send me a note and let me know, because it's not the clearest of picture from on any given day, but certainly New Jersey is among the teams that have most aggressively, I would say, or been out there looking at what's available, talking to teams, weighing the options, because they're, you know, right near the bottom of the league in team save percentage. So, you know, I think that the vibes are trending in the right direction as we start looking ahead a little bit towards spring. Not quite spring, but we got the sun out here in Toronto today, Julian, so I'm feeling spring-like. And, you know, it's going to take a great push by the Devils, but I think we're going to have awesome playoff races this year. You know, one thing, if you remember last season, especially in the Eastern Conference, the eight teams were locked in, or there may be a group of nine that were in play into March, but, you know, the only question was seeding. This year, I think there's legitimate question about who's getting in, who's getting out, and it's possible a team that had big aspirations like the Devils, you know, doesn't find their way in. I mean, they still got lots of time, but you just got to feel like someone's going in for a heartbreak here. And while I don't cheer for heartbreak, I do think it makes it pretty damn compelling as we watch it all unfold in the next couple of weeks.
One more thing for us here on the early week edition of the CJ Show. We'll get to ask CJ questions later in the week. But the Oilers will play against the Golden Knights on Tuesday night. The Oilers have an opportunity to equal the 92-93 Penguins for their 17-game winning streak. Do the Oilers do it? Yes or no?
Come on.
I got to hit you with at least one prediction opportunity.
I'm going to go with no. I hate for them that this game comes the first game after the All-Star break on the other side of the continent from where Draisaitl and McDavid were. And look, I know every team travels and blah, 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 blah. It's only the All-Star game. But I just feel like it's not the optimal way to go into this kind of game. And you can imagine, I mean, look, it's just a big divisional game too. I mean, Vegas, you know, that's a team that's dealt with its own share of injury troubles this year and challenges. But it's a tough building to play in, T-Mobile Arena. The Golden Knights will have read all the press clippings about how they can be subject to this, seeing a rival, a team they beat out in the playoffs last year, set this record. I just don't think it sets up in Edmonton's favor. And obviously a lot that's had to go Edmonton's way to win 16 in a row to begin with. So I hate making that prediction, and I will wear the egg and the Joker's hat if I'm wrong. But I don't got a good feeling about this getting to 17 games or beyond for the Oilers.
I don't know if it'll get to 20, but I feel as if it's going to happen. I think they're going to win over the Golden Knights, and they're going to at least tie it. I don't know. Just look, the Golden Knights had a bit of a layoff too, right? They have to deal with that as well. So I think at least for Connor McDavid, while the team says that they're not thinking about the streak, I think they've been playing at such a high level for all those guys to keep themselves going. Like I could sort of see it at least for one game, I don't know who they're playing after Tuesday night, but I could see them kind of falling at the wheel, but I could see them tying it tonight. I'm going to say yes.
But the Golden Knights didn't have their main players at All-Star. I don't know. I just think that they're playing at home. It's just a little more settled. They probably had more skates together back since, you know, their last game. I don't know.
Your arguments make perfect sense. The thing is, we cover a sport that 9 times out of 10 just doesn't make sense. So that's why I'm picking the Oilers.
Come on,
really.
It makes sense more than 9 times out of 10. Fair. Or 1 time out of 10.
You're right. But no, I just want chaos.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's an unreal run. And, you know, the NHL's record book is a difficult thing to navigate. There's been different, you know, tie-breaking formulas. There were ties once upon a time. Wasn't always 3-on-3 overtime form. Like, there's all sorts of permutations that say we're not comparing exact apples to exact apples when it comes to 92-93 Penguins and the 23-24 Oilers. But nonetheless, whatever it is, it's still an incredible achievement. The fact they had an 8-game winning streak too, that's what kind of blows my mind. I mean, any good or great team, you know, things come together for a period and you get hot, your goalie gets hot, whatever it is, the power play's clicking. But like Edmonton has done 2 extended runs now, which I think is very difficult to do. And there's still so much of the season left. I mean, it's kind of weird. You can't choose when this comes, but you probably would want it a little later if you're the Oilers, because you just wonder whenever it ends, however it ends, like what kind of lag comes into play after that happens.
We'll be back later this week with a brand new edition of the CJ Show. We tried to keep it short and sweet. Hopefully I sounded okay. I'm at the TD Garden Media Workroom. Seemed like it was okay on our end if you're able to get to this point in the episode. So thanks for being patient with whatever issues I had. Never been there. I felt like lost like the entire time, like trying to walk through the arena and the practice facility yesterday. But I found my way here, so it worked.
Some of the most memorable games I've covered in my whole career have been in that building. I've got a lot of affinity for TD Garden. I know it's getting to be an older rink, and you got to share the media elevator with the garbage cans and all that stuff. But
yes,
despite some of those work related challenges, you know, it's not as pretty to the eye, but it's, man, it gets loud in there. I love the vibe in Boston for big games. And, you know, they got an elite candy bar in the press box, Julian. So maybe mix in a workout this afternoon, because you will have the opportunity, not saying you need to take it, but you will have the opportunity to eat some sweets later tonight when you go to that game.
Boston, I gotta say, if this is true, Boston will enter my top 5 NHL cities.
Trust me, it's like an elite. If you like candy or like cupcakes and things, like there's a lot of sugar in that press box, brother. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Jeez. All right. Well, I'm sure I'm glad I'm doing this intermittent fasting. Anyway, subscribe.
There's also a Whole Foods around the corner. That's usually where I get lunch there. So if you're looking to kind of counterbalance things, the Whole Foods is maybe a 10-minute walk or 8-minute walk from the rink, and there's lots of good food options in there that are a little healthier.
I'm going to take you up on that. In the meantime, everyone watching or listening to this podcast, subscribe to our show. We'll be back later this week, presumably the Thursday or the Friday, provided I get to be in a hotel with good Wi-Fi. We'll be back with a brand new episode of The CJ Show. For CJ, I'm Julian. So long and peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JKMcKenzie.